Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Today we're launching a new limited run series that focuses on surf shops and their cultural influence on surfing. I've been remiss to not include surf shop owners and their stories on this podcast over the past 6 years. The truth is, surf shops are inextricable from my surf experience. I bought my first surf film at Harbor Surfboards in Seal Beach, one of the shops we'll be featuring in this series. My first surfboards were gifts that came from garage sales, but shortly after that, the first boards that I purchased were Ryan Sakel's used boards from his dad's shop, Sakel Surfboards, on Main Street in Huntington Beach. Anytime I needed wax, I would try to go into a different surf shop, one that I hadn't been in before, just so I could peruse all the different boards that I couldn't afford, but I'd fantasize about. I often felt intimidated in those shops, like I was underinformed or not cool enough, just didn't know the right questions to ask about surfboards. So instead, I'd usually just nod along, pretending to understand it if an employee ever engaged me in conversation. I remember trying on booties one time. I was 15 with my best friend Ryan Williams, and it was going to be the first pair of booties for both of us, and obviously booties are super hard to get in and out of. So I was hopping around on my right foot while trying to wrestle the booty onto my left foot, standing on one foot. And the 20-year-old sales rep, who was a great surfer, and I recognized him from surfing the pier all of the time, he was looking at us and he goes, "Man, I've never seen anybody try to do it on one foot before," which Ryan and I thought to be a compliment, but kind of afterwards thought about it and realized that he was totally just making fun of us. So we still laugh about that. And I think about it nearly every time that I wear booties. So this series dedicated to surf shops was prompted by the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center, whom I utilize as a resource, and they provide studio space for me to record podcasts regularly. On August 9th, they're launching a new exhibit entitled Temples of Stoke, a celebration of surf shop culture. They've invited 25 iconic California surf shops to install shrines of photos, memorabilia, and artifacts that tell the story of their shop and the role that it plays in their respective California beach town. Hobie Alter once said, quote, "A great surf shop is a social and cultural hub for surfers, a place to hang out, check out boards, brag about great waves or new spots, and laugh about a horrendous wipeout," end quote. I've recorded 5 conversations with different shop owners. Each represents a totally different style of shop and a different approach to business. I'd love to continue this series beyond that 5. I spoke last year with some people in New Jersey, surf shop owners, so maybe we'll do this regionally, but for now, I think this series of 5 is a solid cross-section that represents on a small level stories and trends of retail and surf culture that are happening elsewhere. And as it turns out, of course, California was an epicenter of board building, which was the entry point into surf retail. Anyway, I'll be publishing this series of episodes every other week for the next couple of months throughout the duration of the Temples of Stoke exhibit at Shack. Go to surfsplendorpodcast.com to learn more about that or directly onto their website, shacc.org. And again, that exhibit opens on August 9th and is open to the public. For this first episode of the series, I'll introduce one of the more colorful surf shops of my youth, the Frog House. Founded in 1962 and located on Pacific Coast Highway in Newport Beach, California, right across from some of the best beach breaks around, even if you haven't been inside of the Frog House, you've laughed at the jokes that they put up on their marquee out front. Or maybe you've slammed on your brakes when you saw the police on his motorcycle pointing a radar gun at you, only to realize moments later that it's just a realistic painting on a plywood cutout that the Frog House crew made. Some civic-minded shop owner might have done that in order to slow down traffic and to keep other drivers safe, but it seems to me that the Frog House staff did it purely for the comedy. A fantastic concept, by the way, and lovingly painted for a punchline that those employees won't ever benefit from witnessing. Just some random drivers getting duped as they pass by. And that type of comedy fits perfectly with the fact that their website that they advertise on their marquee, froghouse.com, hasn't worked in years. All of this is orchestrated like an off-tempo, avant-garde, improvised jazz piece by the maestro T.K. Brimer. Always in shorts, sometimes a shirt or a leather vest, thick black framed glasses, and 1,000 words a minute fumbling from his mouth. The Frog House is a cultural gem. And really, considering the surrounding wealth of the community, all of the development, how many episodes of The Real Housewives of Orange County were filmed at nearby restaurants, it's really confounding to reflect on how little the Frog House has changed since my youth. Here's T.K. Brimer with its story.
Are you going to have a gauge on there that tells you if we're getting
too far? You can't look at my questions.
I want you to be...
Surprised, wow. Exactly.
That's didn't see that
the
coming.
The element of surprise is what we're going for.
Whoa!
Let's start with... This building is, number one, prime real estate and just an epic space that you have Frankensteined into your own making. What's the origin of this building?
Well, you know what? The Frog House started in 1962, and I know you're going to get to that question someday, so there you go. I took it right away from you. But in 1962, the Frog House opened up in a old abandoned gas station, which you'll see two blocks, what seems like northwest of here on Coast Highway. You've never seen it before in your life, but now that I mentioned it and you drive by, you'll look and you'll see it. And the place was a shambles and no security, didn't even have a good locking door situation. And this building here came available. It was Hosse Speed Shop. Hosse Speed Shop had been here for some 18 years or something and did, you know, hot rod conversions and equipment, that kind of stuff. But it had gone out of business. And Frank Jensen, who was the originator of the Frog House, came down and opened up the front door to this place when it was available to rent and looked inside. And it was so filthy, dirty, that somebody goes, "Oh my God, it looks like Frog's house." And Frog was an old friend that we had, that no one would go to his house because it was so filthy, dirty that he would eat Kentucky Fried Chicken, throw the bones on the floor, and they stayed there.
No way.
They didn't. Crazy. They stayed there for a year.
Crazy.
And it was gross. You wouldn't go in Frog's house. Someone goes, "Oh my God, it looks like Frog's house." And Frank Jensen, the star place, goes, "Hey, we'll call it Frog House," which has nothing to do with surfing, which is a name I've never loved at all.
Oh, really?
But this is 1962, and he was in charge, and I wasn't even working. I wasn't even in the state of California at the time.
Okay.
Because I didn't get here until 67. And so got named the Frog House, and he started renting the thing, and ultimately he ended up buying it from the original owner. It's the building that, you know, we do our retail space, and then there's the space that we're sitting in right now is actually on what they'd be an empty lot according to the city, and then this little red house that's behind us here is on a third lot. So there's three little lots in a row here. Ultimately, I ended up buying these from Frank Jensen 10 years after I bought the property, business, and I own them today. I tell you the truth, and there's people in this industry that don't like the fact that I own this business or this building and property, and it's paid off. So I pay zero rent if times are tough, and I pay exuberant rent if times are flush. And that allows me to operate the way we do and stay in business. And that's one of the reasons we're still here, is because we own the property. And at our times, I don't pay rent for 6 or 8 months because, you know, we're going through a terrible bad spell for one reason or another. Oil spill comes to mind back in the, when the heck was the oil spill? You ever hear the oil spill? The
Exxon oil spill?
Yeah, way Exxon back. Oil spill. And I didn't pay myself rent for several months back then because business was so terrible. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, it's a prime real estate. And it's probably my best retirement access. Hey, you can get rid of it. I can't say the word. I'll access. No, what
asset.
Is it? Asset. Retirement asset. It's probably my best retirement asset.
I mean, it's spectacular. It is so enviable.
Well, you know, I tell you this.
Let me interrupt you real quick. What's enviable about it is that it's maintained all of its charm that it had since, whatever, 30 years ago. You know, so many other properties on PCH, I've lived here my whole life. I drive by and it's like, it gets purchased every 10 years, torn down, build a new one.
Right.
Build
right.
a high rise. Buy five
of them.
Out
with the old, in with the new.
Build a Hyatt.
Yeah, you know? that's
And this is the one thing that in my life has just always been there.
And perpetually the same. Hey, you know what? And I know that if you go to Main Street and Coast Highway in Huntington, they call it the epicenter of the surf world. That's Mega Jacks. That's Mega HSS. That's 12 other surf-related doors up Main Street. And oh my gosh, back when I was a kid, I thought, that's where you want to be. But you know, every once in a while, I find myself walking down Main Street and I go, thank God I don't have a shop on Main Street. Yeah. There are 14 million IE people walking in and out of each one of those shops. Less than 5% of them want to buy anything. Most of them want to just look at things. And then the percentage of those want to steal something. And it's not an enjoyable interaction with a customer in my mind. I walk away from there and go, thank God I'm not on Main Street. Yeah. If a guy takes the time to pull off the highway and park here at the Frog House and come in, he may not buy something, but he had his mind on buying something pretty much. You know, I mean, you got a good shot to sell him something. It's not a bunch of looky-loos that just are, hey, we're in town from San Bernardino, and let's walk down on the pier and let's browse through every surf shop. I've been up there and seen shops that have 80 people in them, maybe more, and I don't know how you keep the shoplift under control.
That's a good point. I'll push back on you a little bit, though, in terms of better chance of selling somebody something. The reason why I would pull off the road and stop here is actually to do with the experience of the store itself.
Oh, well, like, thank you. And that, I mean, I recognize that, and I appreciate that you recognize that also.
It's like, if I'm going to buy a bar of wax, I actually might choose the big box store if I want to just get in and out and not have an interaction and want it to be anonymous, because there's times in my life where I do want that.
You want to be anonymous.
But the other part, but more often than not, it's kind of like I want to, if I'm having a beach day or whatever, and I kind of want to, I don't have to be home at a certain time, and I want to just kind of go see. When I was a kid, it was just what new films were under the glass, under the counter out front.
Right.
And I can come and I can chat with somebody behind the counter.
Hadn't that changed, by the way?
Yeah.
No new films under the glass any longer.
True.
But
I want that human interaction is the reason why I would come in here.
And by the way, that's our clientele that return year after year are here for that interaction. It's interesting to me that I do have some people in here that come in for first time and don't come back because they don't want that interaction. They don't want the real, they don't want a real opinion from a guy behind the counter. They don't want to be interacting on a equal basis behind the counter, especially Newport money. There are some people that come in and they are want to look down on the guy behind the counter is maybe less than they are or something. Right. And those guys don't make it around here. I mean, not in my shop, and they don't come back, and that's okay.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I've seen the opposite too, where the small shop like this is so cool. It's almost like it's so surfy that if I'm new to surfing,
I'm afraid to come in. Now, you know what? When I grew up surfing, and I started surfing on the East Coast in Florida, I started in 1961, and I would go in surf shops, and the shops, there would always be some super hot surfer guy behind the counter that was so stinking cool that he couldn't have any time for me whatsoever.
Exactly.
And almost with an attitude that, hey, I'm paying retail, I must be a complete kook, because anybody's any good is getting something for free or at least a discount. And that hurt me when I was young. And when I got in a position to control the way people act in this shop, whether it was a manager in the early years and then as an owner when I ended up buying the place, one of the first things I talk to my employees when they come in, one of the first lessons they get, I tell them this. I go, you know what? The guy walking in the front door of this place is way more important than you are. I can get rid of you and get a new one of you tomorrow. If I put an ad in the paper that we have openings at the Frog House, please come apply. I truly believe there'd be 50 or more people outside the door the next day going, hey, I want to work in here. But if I lose a customer, I don't ever get them back again. I can't replace the thing. He's so much more important than you. And if you ever feel that you're better than he is, your time's limited in here, because I can't have everybody treated that way. That's a thing that came from my youth. Another thing that came from my youth that I've made sure never happens in here too is I bought a used surfboard and put it on layaway and made payments for it for months and months and months, and mowed my lawns and washed the windows and whatever it took, you know, to get the dough. Then I came to pick it up and the guy goes, hey, you want a skeg with that? And I'm going, oh, do I have a skeg? He goes, well, no, don't come with a skeg. How much is a skeg? $18. I'm like, crap, I don't have $18.
Dang.
Yeah, if I walked out of here, or not here, but walked out of that place deflated.
Yeah.
All this time I can't go surf today. You buy a used board in the Frog House, it always has a skeg.
Yeah.
Always comes with a skeg. But funny how those youthful experiences have modeled how this place is run now. But you mentioned that it's an interesting interaction. I think that we do have an amazing touch with our employees that come in. First off, no one comes in the front door, hopefully, without saying hello to.
You can't. Such a small space.
Oh, it's small.
You can't sneak by.
You can't sneak by.
Yeah.
And if I'm around, and most of the guys, if you buy something, you're going to get a thank you.
Yeah.
You're going to get a thank you from the guy that owns the place.
Yeah.
And you know why you get a thank you? Because I'm thankful. I mean, it's not bullshit. I'm thankful. I am so thankful you came in here and bought that leash, and I made $12 sell it to you, because you know what? I've still got a job tomorrow, and I'm still going to be hanging out at a surf shop. I'm not going to be working in a cubicle doing accounting somewhere, or you know, whatever kind of career awaited me if I didn't make it here.
Yeah.
So the appreciation is legit, and people can feel legit.
Yeah.
You know.
Let me ask you this.
Are you going on your list, or are you just making this up?
You've covered like 8 things on my list already, freestyle.
I'll try to slow down.
No, it's perfect. Makes my job way easier. So much of throughout surfing's existence, you could not be a surfer without a surf shop. You needed to buy a surfboard. Sometimes you could go direct if you had builders in your community, but there's only board builders in certain communities. So you either needed a surfboard, you needed shorts, you needed wax, and that was only available through a surf shop. Can you envision a future where all surf products are purchased online?
Well, I can envision it. It's like a bad dream I hope I can wake up from, but I see myself throwing around in bed screaming and yelling, no, don't let it happen. I got to tell you, if there's a sadness in my life, it's what the youth of today are missing out in the surf world. The youth of today are not missing out on performance boards. Everybody makes great boards. Lost, Channel Islands, Rusty, any of the good manufacturers are making great surfboards. But they're missing out on the, what are they missing out on? They're missing out on the personality of the sport. The personality of the sport. You go in a surf shop, and this is where I learned how to drink a beer and not let mom and dad find out about it. This is where, back in the olden days, because I'm an old hippie from 60s, you know, there was like a pot and things like that. And not that a pot should be part of surfing, and it should not be. And I'm glad that we've evolved out of that 60s and 70s things when it was so tied into surfing. But oh gosh, just the whole atmosphere of the surf world has changed so much, it breaks my heart, these young kids that don't get to see it. Now, some of the kids that are coming here are still getting a flavor for it, but if kids are going in the big box retailers, you know what? There's the biggest retailers in this industry have people selling on the floor that don't surf.
Right.
They don't surf.
I mean, those are entirely different businesses. Those big box retailers, it's just a commodity, the things that they're selling.
Right.
There's no culture or salt in it.
I get people come walking in every day wearing their T-shirts. You know,
right.
Wearing the T-shirts,
and I want to go proximity to them.
I want to go, where did you? They have that thing in the trash. Why would you wear that thing?
Yeah.
That outfit has nothing to do with surf.
Yeah.
And just the lameness and understand.
Let me ask you this though. I asked, could you envision a future where all surf products are purchased online? And your answer had nothing to do with a threat to your livelihood. It was more about the culture being lost right. for the youth.
The online will never be a threat to my livelihood. I already pointed out, own the property. I don't have to pay rent. I can exist here very, very cheaply, and will, I hope, for as long as I'm still surfing, I'm going to be working in here, I hope. Although I got a wife right now that's pushing back, going, I'm so sick and tired of doing books for the Frog House. And if you notice, when you come in the Frog House, we don't have a computer. We write handwritten tickets. And by the way, a lot of my clientele enjoy the fact that we write handwritten tickets.
There's a charm to it.
And it's not a computer. There's a charm to it.
Yeah.
There's a realness to it. There's a personal to it. The guy hit me up for a discount, and I can discount $5 because I'm handwriting it. I don't know how you do that if you got a computer. My inventory is not on a scan, a scan program where you just bring it up to the front counter and they scan, and you owe me this much. I have to talk. Go, oh, you got this, this item and that item, and it lends to more interaction with the customer and myself. But wherever I was going with this, I have no stinking idea.
Would there be benefit to implementing some of that?
That's a benefit. That's why you see it in every store out there. Sure, there's benefits. It's called making money.
Yeah.
Making money is not my high priority. It's not my highest priority. And I just say that with, in all honesty. You know what my highest priority is? Well, first, it's family. It's family and health. And it's enjoying my life. And when I grew up, I wanted to work in a surf shop. I wanted to work in a surf shop, and I've gotten to do that my whole life pretty much. And I never, ever wanted to work in a clothing store. And that's what, two-thirds, five-eighths of this stinking industry, surf industry, and it bothers me that we call it an industry.
Does it?
I don't want anything to do with it, industry. I like the sport of surfing. Screw the industry.
Yeah.
How many of these industries are owned by surfers nowadays? Who owns Quick? Who owns Volcom?
Shareholders.
Who owns Bill
shareholders.
Bob? Who owns these guys?
Yeah.
Bunch of shareholders. Non-surfing shareholders. It breaks my heart that they are sucking the life out of a surfing world for profit. But anyway, that's what got me on this rant, was profit.
But you're carrying all those brands in your store.
Carrying a lot of those brands. Each one of those brands has a story to it. And you want to hear stories?
Yeah.
For instance, Volcom. Wooly Wilcock lived in the house straight behind us here, actually second house back when he started to Volcom. And he would come in and, for a year and a half, he brought us Volcom stickers. Everybody's going, what the heck is Volcom? Who knows, but here's a sticker. And a little preemptive advertising. And when he started building his first product line, we were his first account. And he's treated us amazingly well through the developmental years of his business. And then while he was involved with that business, still treated well. I've gone to Tavarua Island at least 8 times on his dime, just from being a good account and a faithful account. And so I've always carried it. I've always carried it as a return to him, the way he's treated me. And it'll be here, and it will be here for a long time. Even though he's not involved in it now, it's still a lot of people up there that have been friends and cohorts and surfing buddies from day one, and I feel like I can support them.
Right.
Now,
so can you fault them, though? I mean, once it goes public and it's shareholder-owned,
well,
it's easy to...
Well, I can't fault them when the only thing that counts is money in the world. I can't fault him
exactly.
at all. Yeah,
yeah, that's
he cashed
kind of
out.
Point.
He got his, 30, 40 million, whatever it was, some amount, and he got his, God bless him. And, he owns houses in Hawaii and houses in Mexico and homes here in Newport Beach, and he's living an amazing world, and good for him, he earned it. But, the making the money is not my number one thing. The number one thing for me is waking up in the morning, smiling, and going off to work, and walking in the front door and being thrilled that I'm here.
I guess the point that I'm wondering about is 5 minutes ago when you are kind of vilifying the industry, quote unquote, but we all, it's such a small little incestuous world that the industry came from. You just gave a great example of being personal friends with these people.
Right.
And I'm wondering for this new kids who are getting into surfing now, maybe their experience is largely online. Is their experience worse? Like, if that future scenario where that kid never has to come into a surf shop, is his surf experience any less rich than mine was by coming into the Frog House when I was young?
Well, in my opinion, yeah. It's okay. Like, it's bankrupt. It's zero. It's shallow. It's nothing. But it's the new reality. And I don't expect him to recognize it as being a bankrupt and shallow. He doesn't get it. It's all he's been exposed to. But I get a kick out of exposing the ones that do wander in here to the surf world a little bit, and to the surf world the way it was in the 60s. And, you know, when I was growing up surfing, and letting them actually interact with the guys behind the counter. You know what you don't get online? You don't learn online that you can't take off on the shoulder when you're a stinking kook. You don't learn that online.
Right.
You don't learn online that, you don't learn online all surface advice that I give to kids. Yeah, there's no human interaction. Well, there's our whole world nowadays, isn't it? But, I mean, you don't learn that the river jet is not a longboard spot. You shortboard the river jet. You want a longboard? You go down to Blackie's.
Yeah.
Blackie's not a shortboard spot, although tons of people surf shortboards there. But, I mean, there's all sorts of rules to the road that you don't learn online, and you learn them in a surf shop.
Gotcha.
And you learn them in the water also. But in here and in other shops like this, the ones that still do exist, you will, you know, I'll run into a kid here that I was surfing with out there earlier and go, hey, guy, you took off on three different guys there, and never looked back. What's this going on? What do you mean? Go, well, that you're not allowed to do that. You're lucky it's in a new world we are now. You're not getting a bloody nose from somebody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because back in the olden days, you might get punched more often. Nowadays, you get punched, and some overprotective helicopter parents got an attorney and a friend of the cops, and it turns into a big lawsuit.
Yeah,
whereas back
here
in the olden days, it would be a broken ego and a lesson learned.
Totally.
You know?
Transitioning into kind of the business itself, what makes money for you in this business? Surfboards, clothing, wetsuits? What does the business look like?
Like I already said, I never grew up wanting to be in a clothing store. And you also, and you maybe not fault me, but point out that I do carry the clothing of those quote industries that I such despise in some ways. I want to point out that in my store, you're looking at maybe 30% what we call soft goods, meaning clothing, stuff that has nothing to do with surfing, and 70% hard goods, which are wetsuits, surfboards, leashes, skegs, even swim fins. I mean, things you use in surf. And I take great pride in being a hard goods store. I go to the surf and sport, and it's the other way around. It's 70% soft and 30% hard goods. And by the way, some of the surf and sport stores have really good surfers working in there, and you know, with Soul and all that, and then some of them have none. But what makes me money is wetsuits.
Oh, really?
Wetsuits make me money.
Interesting.
Surfboards don't make me or anybody else any money.
Really?
Oh, gosh, are you kidding? That Channel Islands or that Lost surfboard or that Rusty surfboard I'm selling for $725, I paid $600 for it. If a guy pays $725, I made $125, which seems like nice, $125. But when you look at a percentage, it's nowhere near the 40% markup I make selling a wetsuit.
Right.
And the guy that pays $725 for that surfboard wants you to throw in a free leash. So there's another $15, $18, $20 off. And he wants you to throw on a tail pad, and there's another $20, $24 off. And then he wants to hang around here all day like he's the king of the world because he spent $725. And sometimes I go, hey, buddy, by the way, you see that guy that just bought two pairs of swimwear over there? I made more money off him than I did you.
And he was in and out.
And he was in and gone. And there's a guy that made me some money today. Now there I used a soft good as an example of a good moneymaker. And that's why people are the surf and sport. And that's why they are the big box clothing retailers, is that's where the money is.
Yeah.
But you ask me where I money make. I make my money in wetsuits.
Got it.
We sell a ton of wetsuits out here. I see numbers. I sell more wetsuits than places that are hugely larger than I am. You know, and we sell a ton of wetsuits. A lot of the retailers don't have any idea how many wetsuits we sell out here, and that's from just years of good reputation,
right?
And good prices. I specialize a lot in off-price rubber. I get a lot of off-price rubber, and some of the manufacturers give me improved access to off-price rubber than some of the other guys, because we've got many years of relationship going on, and they take good care of me that way. But the answer is rubber.
What does off-price rubber mean?
Off-price rubber usually means that at the end of the season, Right now, I'm selling off-price rubber from 2019 because the 2020 stuff is hitting actually available now in many, many stores.
Yeah.
And a lot of retailers will send back old product, 2019 product. And then also a lot of retail or wholesalers will be stuck with a certain amount of last year's product hanging on the rack. Yeah. And I'll negotiate a price below the normal wholesale for it. And then I'll bring it here and sell it for a discount off price. And a huge reputation for years of doing it. And generationally experience of generation come in and buying it and just sell wetsuits. Sell wetsuits.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
And we're sitting by two sewing machines, by the way, as well. So that's a portion of your business. Wetsuit repair. And there's a board ding repair blocker right next to us also.
Yep. The wetsuit repair is not a big moneymaker for me, but it brings people in the shop. Now, you got to bring people in the shop. You got to bring new people in the shop all the time. And the way it's done classically is you buy a full-page color ad in Surfer Magazine, and it runs $28,000 to bring in somebody looks at it and goes, hey, I'm going to go to this place because they ran a good ad. By the way, a lot of the ads look like crap. But I don't have a budget to be able to do that. B, so I use a very effective method, and the wetsuit repair is one of them. If a guy buys a wetsuit at another store, and they come in and they want to get it repaired, depending on the policy of the store, oft times they'll go, you read the label with the manufacturer, you mail it back to that manufacturer and tell them you got a warranty problem. You know, don't come darken my doorstep with your warranty problem. Mail it to the manufacturer, which is something we'd never do at the Frog House, by the way. But a lot of times they'll say, or you can take it down to the Frog House, and those guys will repair it for a nominal fee. They'll repair it, and they walk in my door. And any one of these guys that walks in my door is an opportunity for me to turn them into a customer. And a percentage of them walk in here and go, whoa, this is personal. Whoa, this is different, and I like it.
Yeah.
Not all of them. Some of them come and go, oh, this is personal. I don't like people being personal. I'm going to go back to being a incognito when I walk in. But it brings people into my shop.
Yeah.
And we get people that come in from, you know, San Clemente, L.A.
Well, because
area.
Not a lot of shops offer it.
I don't know another shop that offers it. And we've been doing it for... gosh, 40 years, I'm sure, at least 40 years.
I mean, I remember getting a wetsuit repaired here when I was young, and it was like $10 or something. Just super nominal.
Still nominal. Yeah. Still really nominal. Like I say, to me, it's a service, and it's an ability to try to harvest another customer.
Yeah, which makes perfect sense.
And the ding repair is a lot the same. I make a little bit of money on ding repair, but ding repair is a service is not offered by, quote, surf shops anymore. Yeah. And I don't know how a guy can be called a surf shop. He can't do ding repair.
That's such a
But thank goodness and bless these guys. They send us ding repairs all up and down the coast. one thing, we have a reputation. If we tell you it's going to be done on Saturday, it's almost always done on Saturday. Good. Through my lifetime, a ding repair guy is a guy that that works for you for 3 or 4 months and then quits, and you lose 3 surfboards in the meantime because he doesn't know where they went, and he's been horribly late, and sometimes the product's not good, and it's usually a huge headache. But this guy named Steve Bailey, about 30 years ago, decided to make it into a real business. And he and the best thing he did was good work, but the best thing he did is promise it on Saturday, have it back on Saturday. Dependable ding repair service. And we keep a records book of when the board comes to us, when it goes out to our repair guy, when it returns from him. Okay. And keeping that accurate record and not losing boards, and then having that dependability, has built our ding repair business up what I consider huge. Now, Bailey did it for about, I'm thinking, 12 or so years. And then he decided to, he got his MBA at, you know, post-grad degree from college, and went off to what we'd call a real job. And now I've had Scott Whitstick took over, and he's been doing it for, I'm just off the top of my head, 28 years or wow. something. I mean, forever and ever. And once again, he does it as a professional business and does hundreds of thousands of dollars, because I'm not his only account. He does hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in ding repair.
Amazing.
And the main thing is, have it back on the day you promised it came back. If not, yeah. make a phone call to that guy so there's not disappointment.
Just basic, you know, these opportunities.
Yeah, the opportunities come along to where you can, A, we're talking about doing the wetsuit repair, or B, doing the ding repair. Those are opportunities. Now, they're not a success just because the opportunity came. You've got to follow through and establish to that customer that you're trusting and are trustworthy and dependable. And that trustworthy and dependable thing is what brings them back a lot of times.
Right. Fascinating. I mean, basic, but...
Yeah, basic, but it's forgotten in most totally. Of the quote surf stores out yeah. there.
And they're almost lost leaders. Certainly the wetsuit repair thing is a lost leader, but it does give you an opportunity to do exactly what you said.
For sure. For sure. And by the way, I usually point out to the guy that had you bought that suit here, it wouldn't be cost you $10.
Right.
I'd be doing it for nothing.
Sure.
You know?
Sure, sure. I'd love to get your philosophy and theory on something. Like, this type of a shop is certainly like the core of the surf industry. I would argue board builders are as well. Like, board builders, the surf industry can't live without those guys. And those guys are so underpaid and undervalued. And you mentioned a couple of large manufacturers that you carry, brands that you carry here. There's so many great board builders locally, right up the hill from here.
Small ones.
Yeah. Why small not? Ones. Why not invest in that? Why not carry those brands? Also, those brands you could sell for $1,000 a board and make larger margin on than you can with some of the large manufacturers.
And some of those shops out there are selling boards for thousands of dollars, $1,200 longboards, $1,600 longboards. I made a trip down through San Clemente last year because I've been hearing about, oh, they're selling. And sure enough, they've got longboards going for $1,400, $1,600. You know, a problem I run into all the time here is that I've been here for so many years, and I started working here in 1967, so I've been 52 years in here. It's hard for me to think about selling a surfboard for $1,000 or $1,200. And I hurt myself all the time. A guy will bring up a set of racks that I used to sell for $12.95, and today they're $39.95, and which is a fair price for that set of racks. But it breaks my heart to charge a guy $39.95 for it. And my employees...
That guy is showing up in an Audi.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, you know, the guy, and he opens his trunk, and he has...
Ain't it the truth?
It's super expensive golf clubs in there.
I don't see that.
So what are you worried about?
And I don't see that, you know. But that's, yeah, that's the truth.
And he lives in Newport.
My employees here always sit here and give me an elbow and try to get me out of the sale. They go, TK, you're going to make some money. Not that they gouge anybody. We're going to sell for what it says on it. You know, we can sell for what it says.
I mean, and so while I completely sympathize with you, and I certainly don't want to spend more on a surfboard than I have to.
But why don't I do more?
Well, my thought is just that those guys building those boards, who are the kids who grew up shopping here and surfing across the street, would like to buy a house in Orange County. Mm-hmm. And realistically, they cannot.
No, they cannot.
And charging the $1,400 is actually a step in the right direction.
Right.
And even with the boards that you do have on the rack, you're lamenting that there's not enough margin there for you.
There's not enough margin
so
there.
So I think everybody across the board, even the manufacturers you did name, need to raise prices.
Well,
so
they it's not raise the whole the well raise prices all the way across.
Exactly, that's my point.
Oh, it's you know what? And it's been this way since the beginning of surf time. I mean, a surfboard that used to sell for $140, brand new board, and it was ridiculous. The labor that goes into it, the love that goes into it, and the low cost that goes into it. But people back in the early days were working it for the same reason I work it today. They wanted to be in the surf industry, or the surf world. I don't like that industry word, but they wanted to be in the surf world, and that was their ticket into it. And by the way, I do sell. I've got three or four local brand shaped surfboards out there on the floor. Also,
what do you got?
I didn't mention them earlier today because they. I'm trying to do a presentation to the mass world out there, and they're not going to recognize
let's give them some
Baltierra
love.
That's out there, and they're not going to recognize. Hey, Key, Zach, I mean, what's your name, Blondie?
Blondie works.
Hey, what's your ex-roommate's board we sell out there?
Panda.
Yeah, Panda. They're not going to recognize Panda worldwide, and they're not going to recognize, a lot of these other small names.
DLC.
But yeah, De La Cruz that we got sitting on the rack out there, and I went surfing with today. But I wish there was a way to wave a magic wand and every surfboard in the whole world went up $300 or $400 in retail, and that money could go back to if I still only made my $100 a quarter, but it all went back to the guys that were laminating and ruining their health, smelling the fumes and dying of brain cancer. And we see it in the industry all the time, and shapers dying from cancer.
Which, and by the way, if they were paid appropriately, they wouldn't have some of those problems that you're talking about. They would be able to invest into proper room. Ventilation, clean room.
Yep, it's true.
Hygiene, all true. This basic stuff.
Now, I think classically... So, go ahead.
The point is there are plenty of glass shops, even here in Orange County, that run to those high standards where it's completely safe. But the problem is because everything's underpriced, there's other glass shops down the street that are undercutting their pricing who the fire department doesn't even know that exists.
And even the ones with you're talking about with the amazing ventilation, you still walk in there and you smell it. You know, I mean, you can't.
They're wearing masks.
If they're smart, they're wearing masks. Yeah. You're running them all the day that aren't wearing masks.
And additionally, just recycling acetone, things like that, like actual environmental protection things that they can implement if they had proper funding. You know,
yeah, true. So it would be good. A problem we've had in the surfboard manufacturing world since the beginning of my time in it is the. The garage guy, the guy that goes, hey, I'm gonna. And by the way, most of our best shapers today came from the garage.
Oh yeah,
you know, and they start in the garage. Totally. I get the kids in there even today, and they're shaping a board, and then they take it up to a professional glass shop and spend $180 on a glass job on it. And I'm going, time out, dude. I go, don't waste $180 on this piece of crap you just shaped. You need to go and buy the materials and. For about $60, laminate this thing in your garage,
right?
And your shapes will improve, and your glassing will improve, and sooner or later you'll be able to sell those boards for what it costs you to build them, and then some months down the road you'll actually just be able to make a profit on them, and you'll end up being a professional shaper. But the professional shaping has always been dogged by the guy in the garage that's trying to learn and is selling it well below. What would be a reasonable wholesale or retail price in order to generate customers so he can keep shape and learn how to shape.
Yeah.
Although, let's talk about how that shaping thing has changed also, by the way. I could be a pretty doggone shaper myself today by buying boards that are cut on computer, and then I just screen them and scrub off the rails, and I can shape a heck of a good board that comes off a computer. There's not much skill involved in it anymore.
Right.
That's another part of the industry that's difficult. But
in regard to how your business has changed over the years, there's a lot of soft tops out there on your floor now.
Yeah, there are.
So
bought a bunch more right now.
How's that as a business?
You know, that's a funny thing.
And does
thing
it cut that, into the hardboard
you,
business?
You know, being old like I am is a bummer being old, but the positive part of being old is we got to see a lot of trends come and go through the industry, through the surf world all these years. And that softboard one is one that has just exploded in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, you know. And for a while there was the biggest surfboard sales in the world is Costco.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Biggest surfboard salesman in the world is Costco. And for one reason, I'm up there buying 200 or 300 of them a year at Costco because I can't buy that board for $100 like they sell at Costco anywhere on the industry for $100. I can't get it cheaper anywhere. And it's a doggone good board for $100. And it has been a positive thing for our industry. Damn, that surf industry. Because a guy can get an entry-level board for $100. That's not much investment nowadays. Guys in a big old truck pay that for a tank of gas.
Yeah.
But
saw Dane Reynolds on his Instagram stories pushing his kid into a wave on a wave storm.
On a wave storm.
So Dane Reynolds has a wave storm.
$100 and they're pretty darn good. But then at the same time, it's become very chic to ride softboards. And some of the best surfers in my shop and some of the best surfers in this town spend a lot of time on softboards, which I'm an old guy stuck in my ways. I'm not that into a softboard.
Me neither.
But these guys are ripping on softboards. They're not ripping like they do on a hardboard, which is my thing. I'm going, why are you wasting time? Because it's cool. Why are you wearing those tight pants that are uncomfortable? Because it's cool. Why are you wearing those stupid shoes? It's very cool, TK. Don't you realize it's
That's
cool?
That's funny.
The so price of cool.
What does it bastardize the hardboard sales?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think it does either. Like those guys who you're talking about ripping on those boards.
They got hardboards too, by the way. My guys. They got hardboards also. But they're just riding the softboards. Well, it's a look at me world.
Yeah.
Look at me. Look, at least this guy here is wearing long blonde hair, looking like a girly and standing in a pose.
Those shorts are from your era.
Yeah, those shorts. Oh, look at the shorts.
He had it first, so it's not cool anymore.
Exactly.
It's not cool
exactly.
anymore. it's a be cool world.
That's a perfect segue, actually. I was going to ask you how employees have changed over the years. Do you find them easier to work with, harder to work with? Are they more willing to work? I mean, we'll always hear gripes about
it. Are we looking for the millennial badge?
I want to know what your experience is like.
Hey, first off, I want to say that in my store here, I've been amazingly blessed with employees from day one.
Really?
There was a time a few years back when I checked records and my average employee was 17 years. Who works 17 years in a stinking surf shop?
You? You've been here 50.
I'm 52 years. But by and large,
that's insane.
They come and they don't go away.
How is that? How do you do
that? They come here because they love the surf. They're here. They're working here for the surf. They get treated well. You know what? I love them. They feel my love. I mean, they feel my love. There's a relational in this store. You're not gonna get this in the big box because there's not. In fact, you know, I hear stories at some of the big box things and the things that go on with employees are shocking to me and saddening to me. I just 3 or 4 months ago, Quiksilver took the best salesman from 15 different surf stores down to a weekend at K38, and they bought a couple of condos for 2 or 3 nights and bought our beer and our food and stuff for us, and we surfed it, and I got to go along and had a great time. But one of the things that opened my eyes was listening to the guys' interaction about employment and their jobs and how it went. And there was a story on, hey, Johnny got to be an... everyone's got a monitor on him or a label. Johnny got to be assistant night shift manager at the store, and which was a big move up to be an assistant nighttime manager, a night shift manager. Each shift as a manager, interesting. But then they got him. They saw him. They caught him on film drinking energy drinks, and he got demoted back to the day crew.
No.
And I'm like going in my going. Oh, who the hell gives a... I mean, what the hell do you care if a guy's drinking an energy drink?
That's hilarious.
And the fact that these kids are used to working under a camera.
Yeah.
They caught him on the camera. And the shock one, that they got a camera watching us. It was Johnny got caught on the camera.
Right.
What the hell? How about the fact that they got a stinking camera on you?
Right.
Who the hell are you working for and they don't trust you enough? They got to have a camera on it and they got someone... They're paying someone to sit there and look at the camera?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Where's the world gone? I'm old and I'm going to die. Thank God. because it's messed up. And I mean, it was shocking to me to hear these guys interact. First off, on how they were, each one were talking about their little position. That he's third in command on the morning shift,
right?
And like now,
all the layers. Now,
I've got a son named Dane, and I love him very much. He's my son, and he went to college, and then he went to post grad and got an MBA degree. And he came to me one day after going to MBA class and went, "Dad, you know, we studied your management style today in MBA class." And I'm laughing. Okay, here comes a joke. Let's see. Stupid style, I'm sure, is what it's going to be. And I go, "Oh, really?" And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "You actually have style?" I go, "What? Really?" And he goes, "Yeah, it's called chaos." And I go, "Okay, interesting. Chaos. Okay, that's the joke. That's the best you can do. I guess you're an MBA." He goes, "No, Dad, it's in the books. It's called chaos."
Yeah.
And he goes, "And in chaos, it's a... it's a type of management that not many people can thrive or live in, but the people that do live in it enjoy it very much. And it's a situation where there's not specified managers and assistant managers, and there's not a specified hierarchy that has to be adhered to. People that can survive in it are people that can come in and open their eyes, see what needs to be done, and get it done." And I think about it and go, you know, that is a lot of the way that we do it here.
You need a conductor in that scenario.
But I get to be the conductor.
That's the point.
I get to be the conductor. But if I got a guy that's been working here for 1 week and he sells the last bicycle rack, the number two size bicycle rack, he's got to get on the phone and order some more number two size bicycle racks.
Right.
I don't have a guy whose job is to go through the shop and realize, well, A, I don't have a computer to tell me that, oh, you just ran out of the last bicycle rack, reorder. So I have to train these guys that you call up the manufacturer and you order up a half a dozen or what you think is a reasonable amount of bicycle racks that you just sold the last one, or you even noticed that we're down to the last one. And the guys that last here a long time are the guys that can have their eyes open and follow through with that. And a lot of the other stores, the guy's not allowed to step his foot into a purchasing position, you know, for years possibly, you know. And another thing we do here at the Frog House, and I'm my wandering here, and I'm good at wandering, but I talk to my guys. We do a lot of special orders for people in here. We got a small store. We got a lot of inventory, but it's a small store. We may not have what a guy wants, but I'll get it to you, and I'll get it to you quick. And more importantly, I'll get it to you dependably. And I will keep in touch with you on the phone every step of the way to let you know what's going on.
Yeah.
That, oh, they're out of them today, but they're going to get them in 3 days, and then they're going to ship them, you know?
Yeah.
We don't take your, oh, yeah, you know, we'll call you, don't call us. And I encourage them, hey, customer, if you call us, we'll give you an update on where your order stands. But I talk to my guys and go, listen, I would like you to do enough special orders every week to cover your cost of you working here.
Yeah.
You know? And it ain't hard. Keep your eyes open.
Yeah.
Keep your ears open. So wants a, you know, we sell a ton of in here. I sell a ton of single fins. The guy's got tri-set. He ran into the jetty, broke out, and lost a fin. I'll get you one fin that's for you. And
it's for a thruster.
For a thruster. And I do 8, 10, 12 of those a week.
That's a great idea. I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah, I hope the other guys are listening to start doing it too, because I make money doing it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's a great opportunity to drop the ball on a customer. You know, you tell them, okay, I'm getting it for you, and it doesn't happen. Well, I sell to them off the rack if I've got it. And then I have a split set I put in a different box.
Yeah.
And then on Monday when the sales rep come in, we go through that box and order replacements on them. But we do a ton of special orders, and it builds up a care and a love between the customer and us. Love might not be the right word, but a trust and a dependableness that they can depend on us, and that pays dividends for years and years.
Yeah. So I wanted to comment on the chaos theory of management.
Oh, the chaos, yeah. And by the way, my daughter Carly, who's a college post-grad graduate also, is very sharp, and but she accurately goes, TK, what you do there is you run the island for lost boys, and you get to be Peter Pan.
That's funny.
And it's so true.
Your daughter calls you TK?
Well, yeah, she calls me
TK.
That's
funny. What does it stand for, by the way?
Well, my name is Thomas Kent Brimer. The T and K are initials, and back in the late 70s, I started a skateboard company, and I didn't have enough money to buy a separate telephone line. So on my business cards, I wrote TK Brimer, and if the phone rang, I knew it was a business call for skateboards, and I could try to behave in a business-like manner.
Gotcha.
And so it was TK. Oh, yeah, you look. Yes, sir, gotcha. This is TK. And it caught on, and it's been TK ever since.
In regard to the chaos theory of management or style, it was actually a question I had driving over here was, you said to me, you know, we started recording at 4:30. We spoke on the phone at 3:45, and you warned me. You go, hey,
I could be lost.
I could be lost. By 4:30, I might be at the grocery store. Maybe send me a reminder at 4:25.
Really?
So if listeners haven't identified it by now, you your brain works in a special way. But what's interesting is it's actually antithetical to running a successful business.
I have no idea what antithetical means.
It's anti.
Oh,
running a business.
Possibly.
To run a business for 50 years, you need to actually cross the T's, dot the I's. You need to be somewhat pragmatic. And it would seem to be that you would step on your own toes. That you, despite if you had a line of customers out the door, that your kind of type of management or functioning would get in the way of potential mm-hmm. success.
It probably does to some extent.
But it's had a wild, it's the perfect alchemy of, we just want to be around you. We just want to be here. What are you selling? We'll buy it.
Okay, I wish it was totally that easy. But you know what? First off, I have a love for the guys that walk in the front door here. I have a love for the customers, and they feel that. And by the way, we were talking also about employees. I love the employees. I mean, I have a love and a care, and it's not for me to toot my horn in here, but others will like go through, you know, just page after page of what I do for. I get parents that come here and go, do you realize that you are the father to my boy? And
fascinating.
And you've done this for years and years of this. And I'll get teary eyed and go, yeah, okay, whatever, thanks. But it's not because I don't get up in the morning and go, I'm going to go out and be the best person in the world. But I care for other people. And I'm hyperactive and attention deficit to the max. My attention deficit is so horrible. Like a shiny dime falls there, I'm off on another direction. But I'm also blessed with a really good mind. And it'll come back sooner or later. I'll go, oh, I got to finish this up. Although you did an example of a line of customers out the door, and I might just be blowing the whole way, and you're right. And I've had my wife just go, TK, finish with one customer, then get to the next customer. Because I'll be trying to talk to four different ones at the same time, and yeah, it makes sense to me, but they're not being satisfied.
Right.
But
right.
So, yeah, it is a difficult, personality. But I am blessed with a youthful exuberance that most people don't have.
Can I ask how old you are?
71.
Crazy.
71 years old. 71 years old, and I couldn't be happier.
Wow.
It's just, and by the way, hey, how do you have this youthful exuberance at 71 years old? I surf 5 days a week. Some of these guys get up in the morning, they go to a stinking gym with a bunch of who knows what kind of people sitting there grunting and groaning and sweating, and they lift weights and they walk on a treadmill and they're hating life. But they try to stay in shape that way. I get up and go surfing, a joyous event, you know, alters your mood for the entire day. And as a sidekick, you get to stay in shape. And yeah, you get good health.
Yep.
I mean, it's just a sidekick.
Yeah.
It's nothing that you point for the good health. It's just following your addiction, and it pays off in good health. Mike could have a aneurysm tonight and die tomorrow if that happens. Goodbye, everybody. I love you. I'm enjoying myself where I am now. But in the meantime, no, I'm super blessed with health.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And then also, I'm also blessed with this thing where I realized that your attitude's a choice. You know what? And my wife is not as upbeat as I am. And some of the biggest conflict we have is she's the half empty, I'm the half full. You know, and I'm like, find myself trying to defend people or situations where she's angry about it. I'm like, hey, this, it could have been that. And I have to stop and just go, okay, she's half empty. Being happy and being joyful is a choice you get to make every day. You would be wrong to think I don't have little tragedies, little problems, things sure you could worry about in my life. But let's not worry about that. Let's not let them win.
Yeah.
Let's, you get to make a choice.
Yeah.
Be happy or be sad, but realize it's your choice.
I love it. I love what you're saying. It's aspirational. What's next for the Froghouse? How much longer will you be here? And what happens when you're not?
You're scaring me to death because everyone's asking that question because I am 71 and I don't look a day over 70 and a half. But yeah, bears are going, TK, what's your exit plan? And I've always said, and I still believe, I'm not going to be the old guy that doesn't surf, that's sitting in the surf shop going, yeah, well, that guy used to surf. Right. If I can't surf, I'm out of here because I do this for the fun of the surf. And I'm getting old. My wife's demanding that I get rid of this place or you know, make a change and not to be involved in it anymore. Mainly because, like I pointed out, she does the books for this place. We don't have a computer. She doesn't get to like push a button and it does the day's report. She has to take every one of those handwritten receipts. And bless her for what she's let me live.
Yeah, of course.
But she takes every one of those receipts and puts them onto a ledger sheet by hand and then uses a hand-run addition machine of their left hand. And adds them up and has to put up with all that crap. And my personality just can't do paperwork. I can't sit still at a desk
right.
that long. Only my ego lets me sit down long enough to have this discussion with you. So I'd be bouncing off the walls already.
So where does it go from here? From Surfing Heritage and Culture's kind of exhibit standpoint, Temples of Stoke, and where will the next temples be for the next generation? You know, what happens with the Froghouse?
There's been a time in this industry when manufacturers have bought surf shops, but they're not doing it right now. But I've even had some soft inquiries through the years from other guys. Hey, TK, are you interested in selling this place?
There would be a long list.
But I don't know that a lot of these manufacturers have discovered that retail is not as easy as they think it is.
Sure.
You know, and they're not buying surf shops like they used to. My own son, who like his MBA, but he's always envisioned himself as something bigger than this, a CEO of a larger company, knocking down big bucks, every year. And so he didn't spend the time in here learning the relationships that keep this place alive right now.
It's all relationships, right?
The relationships are so huge keep this little place going. I'm not a no-pay, but I'm a slow-pay for a lot of these guys. But for a lot of them, I've got so many years of experience with them, and trust has been built up. And in fact, people ask me, TK, what do you do for a living? I go, oh, I run a surf shop, but that's a lie. I juggle debt. That's what I do for a living. I juggle debt. I have $1 to pay, and I have four people that I owe a dollar to, and I get that dollar to one of them and keep the other three happy until they get their dollar. And I could give lessons on how to do that that the kids wouldn't understand today.
Well, I'm glad that you said that, though, because that's something that a lot of people would be embarrassed to admit, but it really is how the industry – sorry to use that again, but that's how – retail runs.
It does run that way.
I mean, and not just in surfing.
It does run that way. Yeah. I had an experience. Boy, I hope I'm not sorry to tell this story, but my son, right out of MBA school, wanted to, I said, you know what? I go, people are doing this .com thing and they're selling stuff online, and the Froghouse has never done that, and I could give a damn about ever doing that. But it's available to you, son, if you want to try and do that. And I've got inventory here and connections, and we could give that a try. And he did give it a try for a couple of years, and it didn't work out. It didn't work out not because of him, it worked out because the industry, because the .com thing was going through a change where these manufacturers sell online now, Right. And I could offer three styles of Billabong short in six colors each, or they could go to Billabong website and look at 14 styles and 18 colors each. Right. Why are they buying from me? No reason to buy from me. And it didn't work out in the long term, except my son learned a lot about business doing it. And his career now, he is in online sales, but using some of the skills that he developed in that ultimately shut down business of froghouse.com. But it came to a time in that business one day where my son was angry at me, like, what's up? And he's going, well, I got a guy who wants to buy a size 34 yellow so-and-so trunk for Billabong. They won't ship me one because you, Dad, haven't paid your bill and they don't want to ship you. And if you'd pay your damn bill, I could sell a pair of trunks and keep my business going. And I'm like, whoa, pretty heavy accusation and all true. Where are we going with this? But I go, whoa, wait, watch this. And I get on the phone. I call Larry at the Billabong. I go, hey, Larry, TK, how you doing? hey, buddy, I need a size 34 yellow, this model trunk. Yeah, I know, buddy, and I got nothing for you this week, but I will have something for you next week. I have some money for you next week. You have my word on that. Oh, thanks, Larry. Hey, listen, I'm going to send my son over to pick those trunks up. Thank you very much. I hang up. I go, now look, son, I go over there and pick up your pair of trunks and sell those things and make your 20 bucks for selling them, you know. But before you go, I want to mention something to you. I go, you know, I owe $430,000 in outstanding debt to this industry right today. I go, now, gosh, I just paid a lot of money for you to go to MBA school, and you know all those student loans you don't have? Those are largely because your dad's a stinking idiot, okay? But let me, did they teach you that you'd have me go to the bank and borrow $430,000 and pay those debts off so you could get a stinking pair of trunks when you need it and make 20 bucks? Do you realize it's going to cost me almost $4,000 a month in interest to pay off that money that I borrowed to pay those debts? I go, that would be suicide. I would be out of business in no time. I go, real, this industry finances my business. It finances my business and charges me nothing for it. As long as I do the dance and I stay in close contact with the guys I owe money to and I come through on my promises and I've got a long time record of coming through, I go, what are they teaching you at that MBA school?
Yeah.
And he thinks, he goes, gosh, Dad, I never thought of it like that, but you're absolutely right. That's an amazing situation you have where you get free financing for your business. I go, dude, open your eyes and recognize it. And go pick up your trunks and think about that while you're driving out to Irvine and make your 20 bucks for you. Anyway, and my son, I love him and he loves me. And like I say, he's working in the e-commerce industry today and doing really well at it. And part of it's lessons he learned in our early exposure.
It's such a great story.
Anyway, it's a good story.
It's a good story. And it, I mean, it's easy to kind of assign a lot of that debt juggling towards mismanagement, you know, or...
Well, I guarantee part of it is.
Well, sure. I'm sure some of it is.
I'm not perfect at it by any means.
Yeah.
I make mistakes all the time.
But the reality is those brands that are supplying you with that product, waiting for that invoice, are aware of those things as well. And they've structured their business in a way to where they can float that, and as long as they're moving product, you know,
right,
it makes sense for their business.
And I say, as long as you come through in the long run,
as long
as
you don't go out of business,
you don't go out. And thank God I haven't done that yet. Yeah. Although they do, you know, they've got lists of guys that do go out of business and
that's
and leave them. Yeah, yeah. And like I always tell them, like, say, I might be slow pay, but I'm not no pay.
Yeah.
And you know what? Today, you could liquidate what I've got in here and pay everything that was that's owed, and I'd have a net left over.
That's the important part.
It hasn't always been that way.
Sure.
I mean, there's been times through the years when you're going,
yeah,
oh, goodness, that's a whole other story.
Well, this has been fascinating.
Hey, that's a wrap it up note there.
Yeah. Well, no, final note for everybody, most importantly, is just what was the last surfboard that you rode?
That I rode? Well, you know what? I've been buying this 6.9 at Channel Islands, and it's the Fred Rubble.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been riding this Fred Rubble for about 8 boards in a row. And, you know, people make fun of the computer. You know what I like? I get the same board over and over and over. And at my age and all, I don't get used to a new board very easily.
Right.
I'm riding a 5.9 for about the last year and a half, and I was riding a 5.5 before that. And I keep getting older and needing a little bit bigger board, but personally I've resisted going to the longboard. I'm trying to save that for 80 years old, but my God, it's only 9 years away. But
5.9 Fred Rubble
in, no 6.9
I'm sorry 6.9 Fred Rubble in polyurethane
poly construction? Yeah, I'm a poly guy. I'm an old school guy. I don't understand the epoxy thing at all.
Really?
I go to get ding repair done on it. It's a lot more work and more expensive. It's billed as being strength. It's stronger. Oh, great. It's stronger than poly? Oh, yeah, but we're going to make it so light that it's no stronger than poly at all. In fact, it breaks easier. Yeah. But look how light it is.
Yeah.
Dang, I'll just stay with poly. I'm an old guy stuck in a rut, and I'm really happy with the with the polyester board.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm enjoying the computer that I get 3 boards a year, the exact same board. Boom, right. Boom, boom.
Right.
And I don't have to adjust a lot when I get the new one. They're almost always just flawlessly into the next board, you know. So I enjoy that. I'm surfing 4 or 5 days a week, and I and my longtime employee, Mikey Bejo, here, we surf at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's our normal deal. That's the crack of early afternoon. And you know what? The school kids have all gone back to school. The worker guys are off to work. And we go out there, and it's not so crowded. And we have a great, great time. And
it's an enviable life.
To me, it's, you know what? It's an enviable life. Really, I look around. I don't see many I would trade for.
Well,
not many.
You would need to be making $5 million a year to be doing it otherwise.
Possibly.
Right here in Newport Beach.
Possibly. Yeah. Oh, I am so super, super blessed that
way. Well done.
Well done. Thank you for that. It's just a selfishness I've always had to try to indulge myself.
Yeah. Good for you. All right. Thanks, TJ.
My pleasure.
I can see her lying back in her satin dress in a room where you do. Better take care if I find you've been creeping round my back stairs.
The Temples of Stoke exhibit launches at the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center on August 9th with an opening reception party that's open to the public. You can get tickets at shack.org, shacc.org. They have California's most iconic surf shops participating, from O'Neill and Hout and Freeline up in Santa Cruz to Jacobs, Bing, Greg Knoll, Hobie, Takayama, Gordon and Smith. Lots of legacy and influence in one space. There's more shops than the ones that I just named. And that exhibit will be on display through October 6th. I'll be publishing my conversations with some of those retailers every other week through that duration, kind of mixed in with our normal programming. So you can find video and photos of TK of the Frog House and all of his shenanigans at surfsplendorpodcast.com. You can also leave a comment there in the comment section for him. And then if you like this show and like this style of content and you want to hear more of it, we simply ask that you share the show with friends. That is how we grow the show. The more people listening, the more shows we will be able to produce, and the more we'll just be able to attract guests to the show, you know, A-listers who want to spread whatever it is that they're doing. They will choose this venue as opposed to traditional or legacy surf media or in addition to it. So just share the show with friends and help us grow that way. You can follow on social media at Surf Splendor, and you can also throw a donation in the donation bucket on surfsplendorpodcast.com/donate. My name is David Scales. I thank you very much for listening and encourage you to get back into the ocean, share some waves, and shred on.
Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. Sundown, you better take care if I find you've been creeping around my back stairs. Sundown, you better take care if I find you've been creeping around my back stairs. Sometimes I think it's a sin when I feel like I'm winning when I'm losing again.